Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Tracy Salkowitz, CEO of the Jewish Community Foundation of Southern Arizona. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Two Jewish Maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's the second day of Passover today, our great festival of freedom and matzah. Actually, Pesach has four official names in Jewish tradition. Pesach, of course, Passover, the paschal offering, it reminds us of, the lamb that was sacrificed and roasted in the days of the Bible and the temple. Chag HaMatzot, the holiday of matzah, the unleavened bread we eat for this week of Passover. Chag HaAviv, the springtime festival, probably the oldest of the names of Passover. And most thematically, Zman Chirutenu, the season of our freedom. Each of these four names is interesting in and of itself. The word Pesach comes from the word for leaping or jumping in Hebrew, an apt description of the way that a young lamb leaps and cavorts in the fields. The use of this animal for the sacrifice of Passover reminds us that the angel of death leaped over the homes of the Israelites when striking the firstborn of the Egyptians, and it also refreshes for us the memory of the leaping joy of freedom, the ability to move and act as we wish that's prevented by slavery. Free people can cavort, skip, dance, or jump as they please. Slaves jump to someone else's command, hence Chag HaPesach, the holiday of, well, skipping. The second name for Passover is Chag HaMatzot, the festival of the poor man's bread, matzah, lechem oni. Unleavened bread made with flour and water in 18 minutes or less, baked quickly and simply, the food that our ancestors made as preparation for a hasty journey in flight, matzah. Of course, on Pesach, we eat matzah all week and therefore do not eat chametz, best described as the opposite of matzah, that is anything made with leavening or fermentation. That means no bread, no beer, and lots of matzah, and other dishes made out of matzah like kugel or matzah brei. It also means that after 6 days of matzah, we really do understand why this is called the bread of affliction. The third name for the festival is Chag HaAviv, holiday of springtime. Undoubtedly, there was a spring festival observed long before the events of the Exodus led to the creation of the holiday of Passover. Spring's arrival is celebrated in every culture and nearly every religion, and Judaism is no different. In our Seder celebrations, the orderly meal we held these last two nights, the first two of Pesach, which taught the meaning and story of freedom in a rich and wonderful variety of ways, spring was featured in the green vegetables we dipped in salt water and in the hard-boiled egg that symbolized the rebirth of spring. The magnificent love poem Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, was chanted yesterday on Shabbat of Passover, and it's filled with images of gardens, growth, and love in the flowering springtime, a wonderful way to celebrate this most beautiful and verdant of seasons. Finally, the ultimate theme of Passover, of course, is freedom, Zman Chirutenu, the time of our liberation. It is this essential ideal that's woven all through the week of Passover, central focus on God's gift of liberty that has made Pesach the model freedom festival for the whole world. B'chol dor v'dor chayav adam lirot et atzmo ke'ilu hu yatza mimitzrayim. In every generation, each of us is obligated to see ourselves as though we personally had been brought out of Egypt. In addition to our own celebration of our ancestors' freedom, we learn compassion, even empathy. For when we can view ourselves as survivors of slavery, we are compelled to sympathize with the dispossessed, a central principle in Jewish belief. But back to that second name, Chag HaMatzot, the holiday of matzah. In the spirit of a holiday that is both profoundly serious, what is more powerful than celebrating freedom from oppression and praying for the liberation of the enslaved? But it's also fun and sometimes silly. Here's one of my favorite takes on just what matzah's like. This is from Eric Schwartz, the Smooth E.
I feel like a freak, because every time I pull out something to eat for this week, I can't do this, because I'm Jewish, and I can't eat bread. Yeah, my rabbi said only matzah. Any way you want to eat it, cold or hot, it's matzah. Fun for your mother, brother, sister, father, matzah. Buy in bulk for a lower cost per box, it's matzah, 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 matzah. Put on your, wait, that's over. So get your ass over to my pad, it's Passover. I'm the Mad Flow, a smoothie, and I hope you understand it. If you want the story of Passover, rent the Ten Commandments, starring Charlton Heston. But I got a question about the bread that is unleavened, causing indigestion, called matzah. Eat it for a week, we got stuff. No bread, no pasta. Best believe a Jew is stopped up. Now Moses made the matzah when he was fleeing Egypt. Had no time for bread to rise, he said, I just leave it. We can eat it like this, feed it to the Hebrews. But little did he know that the weight would end up equal, cause
let my people go
became the anthem. Get your damn hands up, maybe it will help you pass some. How could one bread rocket so famous when the taste is the same flavor of the box it came in?
Matzah,
eat it at once, ain't no second guessing.
Matzah,
leaving crumbs on my lap and chest, and it's called
matzah.
I found the afikoman in my small intestine.
Matzah, 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 matzah.
Now if you never had matzah, maybe you should try it. Be careful, protein junkies, don't mess up your Atkins diet. People laugh when my sandwich cracks, it ain't never quiet. The best place to enjoy matzah is in private. You eating tuna on matzah? No way you're looking cool. It's been 3 days since I dropped the kids off at Hebrew school. I like my matzah sweet with butter and jam on it. But please, out of respect, just don't put ham on it. Don't be scared of the matzah. Nothing could be safer. Just think of it as a super-sized communion wafer. We'll trade you the matzah for candy this Easter. Wait, for some reason we can't have corn sweetener either. So go ahead and eat it, whether Jewish or secular.
That was Eric Schwartz rapping about matzah on Passover, the bread of affliction we eat this week. Actually, at the Seders we celebrated the last two nights, we were supposed to have a whole sheet of matzah to fulfill the commandment to eat unleavened bread as much as our ancestors did. You know, last year I had the remarkable privilege of celebrating Pesach and attending the Seder in Cuzco, Peru. You might expect that there would not be many Jews to join me there, but in fact, Peru is on the post-Israeli army backpackers circuit, and there were well over 1,000, mostly young people, at the Seder I went to in Cuzco. 500 millennials in two shifts, singing Passover prayers and songs, drinking kosher wine, eating matzah and maror in the full kosher for Passover meal, and speaking Hebrew. Truly, Jews everywhere experience Passover simultaneously, rejoicing in this great season of freedom. And only 5 or 6 more days of matzah to go. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Tracy Salkowitz, CEO of the Jewish Community Foundation of Southern Arizona, helps people fulfill one of the great commandments in all of Judaism, the giving of tzedakah, charity, through legacy giving. Find out how it works when we return in a moment on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish this morning our guest, Tracy Salkowitz. She's the, executive director, CEO, president, person in charge of the Jewish Community Foundation of Southern Arizona, which does incredible work in philanthropy, in planned giving, in a variety of ways that people can create a legacy for themselves financially and for the future. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Rabbi Cohen.
So tell us, in a simple way, why people should have a legacy plan?
Well, it's about what kind of legacy people want to have. My joke is you don't have to stop giving just because you've stopped living. People care about the future. They care about the things that they're passionate about. They don't want to stop supporting those things. So doing a legacy plan, what used to be called planned giving, is a way that people can ensure that their passions carry forward after their lifetimes.
In Judaism, we talk about our dedication to the future. When you're meeting with a Jewish donor, what's the first thing you say?
Tell me your life story. It truly is, because when we meet with donors, it's really about what they care about and what they're passionate about. So when we meet with donors, we then hear where their passions are. But when we talk about the history of the Jewish Community Foundation, we were created because while we care about the entire community, nobody's going to care about the future of the Jewish people except for us.
Now, in caring, there's lots of different means of doing that. Obviously, we teach, we do sort of regular things, then we amass some sort of estate. We decide how we want to distribute that. People also do that during their lifetimes.
Correct. There are some donors that only want to give during their lifetime, and we celebrate that. And then there are donors who want to give into the future. We have donors who consider the community one of their children. So if they have three kids, they divide their estate into quarters. Which is really wonderful. When people are younger, when they have younger children, of course they want to make sure that their children are protected because we don't know what the future is going to bring. But as the kids grow up, they get wonderful jobs, they're very self-sufficient, the balance changes. And so many of our donors feel, okay, my kids have great jobs, they make more than we did, we can afford to give more to the community. But it's always about the donor. And one of the things I love about foundation is that it's the great equalizer, because $10,000 or $5,000 to one person is $1 million to somebody else. It's all about all of us doing what we can to ensure our future.
Looking to the future, a central Jewish concept, we will talk much more about legacy giving with Tracy Sokowitz of the Jewish Community Foundation of Southern Arizona. We'll return in just a few moments here on Too Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey,
good
Rabbi.
Morning.
You have a very wide range of ages in your clientele.
Yes, we do. Anywhere from 18 up to 90.
90. So people who are 90 decide they finally want to quit smoking.
Yes. They want to see their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren graduate high school and get married, go to college, that kind of thing.
It's incredible. What's the oldest person you've ever served?
Me personally, I had one that was 90. Last week, I had one that was 88. He's been with us for a couple of years and very, very pleased with how he quit, and his health is getting much better than it used to be.
You can breathe easier. You can smell things. You can taste things that you haven't been able to do so in years.
It's incredible. Where can people go to find out more information?
You can either visit us at our website at freedomsmokeusa.com, or you can call on our 800 number, 800-705-7013.
And we have four stores around the greater Tucson area. We're in Catalina, Sierra Vista, and we're even in southern Michigan.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, twojewishradio18@gmail, or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website, or download us at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. We have 6.5 months until we elect a new president of these United States. We continue our election year feature, the 2016 Too Jewish Presidential Report. As expected, the Republican side of the New York presidential primary election went to Donald Trump, a truly native New Yorker. The Democratic primary was won by Hillary Clinton, former two-term senator from New York, over Brooklyn-born and reared Bernie Sanders. Although the two victors' percentages of the vote were fairly close, Trump won 60% of the Republicans, while Clinton got 58% of the Democrats, the apportioning of delegates was not. Trump took 89 of the 90-some Republican delegates, while Hillary Clinton got 139 delegates to Bernie Sanders' 106. New York's home to the largest number of Jewish voters in America, and while it was never in doubt as to who would win, the Jewish vote pattern was interesting. In Borough Park, home of the largest Orthodox community, Ted Cruz actually beat Trump, while John Kasich led Trump in Manhattan. Trump took the Russian Jewish vote overall by a heavy margin and the election. On the Democratic side, Clinton clobbered Sanders in Brooklyn and won the Orthodox Jewish Democratic vote because of her strong support for Israel. Sanders' missteps on Israel in recent weeks did not help the perception that, although Bernie once lived on a kibbutz, he is too critical of Israel and not supportive enough of the Jewish state. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So, and Chag Sameach, happy Passover. We've been talking about the rise of the far right in European politics and some of the instability going on there. There's a big election, and I'm not sure why it's a Jewish issue, but somehow it seems like it is. The United Kingdom, Britain, may pull out of the European Union, like for real, and not very distant future.
Right. There's a special referendum in June, and the Scots have already threatened that if the UK decides to pull out of the European Union, they will pull out of the United Kingdom, which would also be interesting, and apply for membership in the EU on their own as an independent country.
Wow.
One of the most interesting aspects of this is that a very influential German journalist recently wrote an open letter to the citizens of the United Kingdom, which was published in the New York Times on the op-ed page, written in English, beautiful English, by the way, pleading with the citizens of the UK not to leave the European Union, saying that it's not in their national interests, and it's certainly not in the best interest of Europe, and that from his point of view, if the United Kingdom jumps ship, it's the end of the European project and the European ideal, which would be a tragedy. Not sure that I agree with everything this guy wrote, Joachim Bittner, but it was very persuasive. And one of the issues that brings all these subjects together is how the UK handles differently from the rest of the European Union the question of a multi-ethnic, multi-complected society. And part of the reason for that is the UK had a global empire. It still has a global commonwealth. And it has people of many races, nationalities, religions, ethnic origins, ranging from Indians, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, and Sri Lankans, to people in the South Pacific,
Hong Kong,
to African colonies, former colonies. Hong Kong is one. But basically, people of lots of different appearances, religions, and backgrounds. And the UK has always been remarkably successful at stitching all these disparate groups together into a functional, basically cohesive society with shared values. Part of it is a shared language that everybody speaks English. Part of it is a pretty strict separation between church and state, except for the fact that the English king or queen, or the British king or queen, is also the head of the Church of England. So there is kind of a state church, which of course there isn't in France or Italy or countries that have a greater problem with minorities than the UK does. You've been in the UK a lot, probably more than I have. So you know whereof I speak. You've seen how well all these disparate groups get along and somehow function as a whole society. And the model is very different because on the continent, there's generally speaking a clear majority, which tolerates a minority up to a certain point, but also tries to place limits on how far off center that particular targeted minority goes. And generally speaking, there is one targeted minority, and of late, that's been Muslims.
Muslims, right. I think it's true, and I think it's an interesting difference.
Although I think if the UK pulls out of the European Union, it won't be because they're better integrating their minorities than the societies that, on the continent are. I hope they don't. I think one reason for the European Union is because it's a better guarantee on not having another European war somewhere down the road. It makes it unthinkable, and I hope that remains true. Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
Now it's time for an occasionally recurring feature of Too Jewish, our most serene Zen Judaism segment. What is the sound of one hand clapping? Much like the sound of a gefilte fish swimming. That was our Zen Judaism segment, a koan for you. Amen. We welcome our Mivina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Chag Sameach, Rabbi.
Chag Sameach v'kasher, Oshrat. A happy, healthy Passover. How are your seders?
Which one? Very good.
So in Israel, really, people just have one Pesach Seder, right? There's
yes.
just the first night. They don't do a second night, even if they're Orthodox, even if they're Sephardim. It doesn't make any difference, right?
Yes. In a way, it's like a wedding. You know, in Israel, you're getting ready like 2 months. Before Purim, you're already cleaning for Pesach. You have a different cabinet for Pesach. And then like in 2 hours, most... Done. One seder, and the next day it's like it's not a regular day.
Not regular. You're still eating Pesach food, but it's not.
Yeah, but the next day, the night, it's just over.
Just like, regular, right? The chag is over.
Yeah.
So as we know, the whole concept of having a second day is related to being chutz la'aretz, to being in the diaspora. We added the day, and for many American Jews, they just don't believe that there's only one seder in Israel. You think that they would trust it by now?
Yeah, there is only one. Yeah,
there are a couple of different customs between the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim on Pesach. For example, rice, a kidneyot. Can you explain that a little bit to us?
I wish I would understand the difference. No. Yeah, so what I understand that in Ashkenaz countries, they would sell the wheat next to the rice, next to the spices. You know, it's all in a sakim.
Right, sacks. Basically, yeah.
Same. So, you know, from the safek, from the doubt that...
The possibility
that one wheat will sneak to, you know, a different sack. So they're not taking chances. Even though they're buying their always their rice in a package at the supermarket
and it's sealed up and there's no way.
And they can
still
check it 1,000 times there. It's like minhag.
It's custom, strong
custom. It's custom that become...
You grow up, you know, Moroccan Jews, Edot HaMizrach... They eat rice, they eat peas,
even among the Moroccans, even among the Sfaradim, and definitely among the Moroccans I know better, have like the family of my father won't eat even garlic. Because if you put garlic in the, I don't know where, and it grows.
It sprouts. And so it ferments a little bit, and that fermentation was almost like yeast
and
rising.
And gam lo hummus, because it sounds like chametz.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so no hummus.
Even though it's a legume.
What's hummus in English?
Well, hummus is hummus, but
no,
it's made from
chickpeas,
right? Chickpeas, of course.
So no chickpeas, no hummus.
Garbanzos, we would say, too.
Even though they will eat kidneyot, they won't eat garbanzo.
So it's very interesting. There are
because of the name, which is because of how it sounds.
Because it hummus, sounds, because hummus sounds
also
like chametz.
Chametz, which is...
chometz ben yayin, we talk
no,
about
no, even chometz, any kind of vinaigrette, because it's chometz, chametz.
Well, it's also fermented, so, but they won't even have apple cider vinegar, which is actually kosher for Passover.
Nachon.
Fascinating. So, interesting customs, different customs, but still lots of delicious food to eat.
Yeah, even though.
Chag Sameach, happy Passover.
Chag Sameach.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, headmaster of Tucson Hebrew Academy.
Shalom.
Shalom and Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach. Passover, awesome.
Oh yeah, everything except matzah. So
not even matzah balls in your soup?
No, matzah balls are delicious. Okay. Yeah, provided they're in the right soup. You
they're
know,
not
sure.
Too dry. Any,
as long as you camouflage the matzah, it's okay. We started talking about the four children at the Pesach Seder as archetypes for the four different ways mm-hmm. that kids learn and maybe mm-hmm. four different characters. We talked about the Chacham, the wise child. Now the Rasha, the one who's called wicked in our Passover
the
Seder.
The rebellious child.
The rebellious child who challenges the reason for why we're doing things.
Right.
That can be really difficult. It mm-hmm. can be really great.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because, you know, when you look at the name Israel, Yisrael, there's a whole concept of challenge and wrestling there. And so there's an intimacy of Jewish identity with questioning authority, with, you know, pushing the status quo, with digging deep to gain understanding and meaning, thinking in a different way. So the challenge, I think, as educators, is to really get to the heart of what's behind a child who may appear to be angry or belligerent or someone that doesn't want to sit and listen and learn. And so, you know, what is it that this child is telling us? I always coach teachers to observe student behavior and interpret the behavior as a reflection of the quality of the experience that they're having. And so if there is an angry child who's upset, who's being defiant, who's blowing up with peers or, you know, shouting down a teacher, what's really going on with that kiddo? What are some strategies to get in and reach that child? And it's all about building a relationship, having patience, knowing that as a professional, you've got a lot of capacity to find different ways to reach kids. And then, you know, working with the child to find out what it is that's going to help them turn a corner and engage. Maybe there's some real anger there. Maybe there's some hurt or upset from experiences. Maybe there's difficulty with socializing and development. There's always something if you have the patience and you dig deep enough and you work with your colleagues and you work with families and potentially resources in the community, experts out there to figure out what's going on.
You know, I often find not often, that really difficult kids are often really bright and really bored.
Absolutely. Yeah, boredom is not a great thing to have going on in educational programs. So again, you know, interpreting the behavior of the kids to tell us how successful, how effective we're being. Do we need to be more engaging? Do we need to try different approaches? Take the lesson outside, throw some hands-on learning in there, come in with something new and exciting that engages the kids.
You know, I saw the Steve Jobs movie not too long ago. And there's a point where Steve Jobs talking about Bill Gates, and he said, yeah, he dropped out from a better school than I dropped out of. We can't always assume everybody's going to go the right path. Sometimes the most challenging kids are the ones who create the greatest innovations.
Yep. And we still love those kids, and we work to bring them forward.
Thanks, John. We will talk next week. Chag Sameach.
Have a great holiday, everybody.
When we return on to Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, THAAZ.org, 529-3888.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish is a Public Service, a special classic Passover edition. A blind man sits on a park bench during Pesach. The rabbi sits next to him and takes out his lunch, including, of course, some Pesach matzah. Seeing the blind man has nothing to eat, taking pity on him, the rabbi takes a piece of matzah and gives it to the blind man. A few minutes later, the blind man turns, taps the rabbi on the shoulder, and asks, "Who wrote this garbage?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish Just For You. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This coming Shabbat, we encounter a bit of a conflict over Sabbath Torah portions. If you're a conservative or Orthodox Jew outside of the land of Israel, you'll be celebrating the eighth day of Passover, the extra day required in the diaspora, next Saturday, and have a festival reading for Pesach. If you are a Reformed Jew or live in the land of Israel, you'll read the Torah portion of Achrei Mot near the midpoint in the book of Leviticus, Vayikra. The two cycles rejoin in a few weeks, but for now, we'll read different Torah portions. More Torah for everyone, kind of. For those of us reading the non-Passover portion, Achrei Mot addresses the issue of creating holiness in our lives. It begins with words that are poignant without being revealing. After the death of Aaron's two sons, it says, referring to Nadav and Avihu, the two young priests who died in the Torah portion of Shmini for offering strange fire to the Lord. Aaron is enjoined to be cautious and scrupulous in all his observances, lest he incur a similar punishment to that of his sons. Achrei Mot then moves to the rituals of the Holy Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. We're commanded to afflict our souls, initem et nafshotechem. The rites described are detailed and delineate how our ancestors observed the Day of Atonement throughout the period while the temple stood. The high priest purified himself completely, then offered sacrifices of atonement for himself, his family, and his people. Then he would purify the holiest parts of the shrine of the temple and bring forward a goat as an atonement offering, the scapegoat to carry off our sins. The emphasis throughout Achrei Mot is on the ways we establish a close relationship with God and then reestablish it and so reacquire holiness. In a world in which our focus is far from holiness, this emphasis on the sacred is striking. In the words of the psalm, "Keep yourself from evil, strive to do what is good and right, and seek holiness daily." A great lesson, indeed. On this Passover morning, and in tribute to the bread of very little flavor, here's the wonderful poet Marge Piercy, a frequent guest of Too Jewish, and her positive spin on matzah. "Flat you are as a doormat and as homely. No crust, no glaze, you lack a cosmetic glow. You break with a snap. You are dry as a twig split from an oak in midwinter. You are bumpy as a mud basin in a drought. Square as a slab of pavement, you have no inside to hide raisins or seeds. You are pale as the full moon pocked with craters. What we see is what we get. Honest, plain, dry, shining with nostalgia as if baked with light instead of heat. The bread of flight and haste in the mouth you promise home." That was the poem Matzah by Marge Piercy for the second day of Pesach today. when we return on Two Jewish. Our guest, Tracy Salkowitz, CEO of the Jewish Community Foundation of Southern Arizona, will explore how generational giving has changed recently and how little investment it takes to create a charitable fund. Find out how when we return shortly here on Two Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A bomb exploded on a bus in the Talpiot area of Jerusalem last week, first such Palestinian terrorist bus bombing in a decade. The Palestinian Muslim Arab terrorist later died after wounding 20 innocent Israelis. Hamas, the Islamist Palestinian terror group, claimed responsibility, although it's not clear they actually sent the 19-year-old Bethlehem Arab terrorist on his suicide effort. The blast exploded weeks of calm in Jerusalem after 6 months of Palestinian stabbings, car rammings, and shootings that left 29 Israelis dead. It was a return to a form of Palestinian violence against Israelis we have not seen since 2006. We are in an ongoing battle against terrorism, Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu said. Terrorism of knives, terrorism of shootings, of bombs, of rockets, and even of tunnels. There was some international condemnation of the Palestinian terrorist attack, from U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry to Bernie Sanders to Angela Merkel of Germany to the Foreign Ministry of Singapore. And finally, after months of refusing to condemn the hands-on murderous terrorism emanating from the West Bank and Gaza, Mahmoud Abbas, president of the Palestinian Authority, denounced all terrorism. In other terror news from Abbas's rival for Palestinian leadership, Hamas, it's apparent that most of the rebuilding going on in Gaza Strip has been underground and for the purpose of terror. While residents of Gaza remain in ruined homes on shattered streets, the international aid that is poured into Hamas-controlled Gaza has been used to try to rebuild the network of terror tunnels that the Islamist terrorists constructed to attack Israeli civilians. Last week, Netanyahu announced the State of Israel has achieved a global breakthrough in the ability to locate tunnels after the IDF found and eliminated an elaborate Hamas tunnel. The terror tunnel was built 100 to 130 feet underground by Hamas. It would have been used for terrorist attacks against Israeli border communities, civilians. It was equipped with electricity and communication lines. Israel believes that Hamas has rebuilt much of the tunnel network that Israel destroyed during the 50-day Gaza War in 2014, and Hamas has been trying to restock its rocket supplies, too.
sweet Mary Jane.
And in a decision that might make Passover a truly high holiday, a leading ultra-Orthodox Haredi rabbi in Israel ruled that marijuana is kosher for Passover. Users can eat or smoke the drug during the holiday. Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky of B'nai Brak explained that the plant, which is normally considered kidney oat or a form of legume not permitted on Passover hemp, is perfectly legal under Jewish law when used for medical purposes. When presented with several leaves of the plant, Kanievsky, a leading halachic authority, was convinced right away. He said the leaves had a healing smell and blessed them. Many have agreed. He was responding to a request for a halachic ruling from the Israeli pro-marijuana group Sion. Another Israeli rabbi ruled medical marijuana kosher in general in 2013. By the way, the conservative movement ruled this year that all kidney oat, including legumes such as rice, beans, and corn, should be kosher for Passover, overturning a ban that's been upheld by Ashkenazic law since the 13th century. No word on who is following that decision, which did not address the question of Mary Jane on Pesach. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, Tracy Sokowitz, the head of the Jewish Community Foundation of Southern Arizona. We're discussing legacy giving. Tracy, when I come into a hospital room on occasion, people say, no, I don't need the rabbi, I'm not dying. People treat legacy that way sometimes too. Like, it's down the road, I'm still vibrant. How do you respond to that?
Well, in olden days, not so long ago, but people really
when we were younger.
The adults kind of viewed estate planning and legacy giving, or plan giving as it was called back then, as what they're going to do when they're dying. And that the conversation has really totally changed, because it's an opportunity to reflect on the values of your life. So it's about celebrating your life and talking about it now and checking in along the way to see how your values change, and bringing your children along. So it's really an entirely different paradigm. It's not about death. It's about life.
The Jewish community has a reputation for being good at thinking about this. That's not actually always completely true. I know that there are universities, symphonies, hospitals have really been amazing at looking forward and creating legacy ideas. Are we catching up?
Well, the Jewish community is the most philanthropic community in the country, without question. If you look at, you can't compare the community to a hospital or a university. It's such a different, that's a different realm. But if you look at caring about the community, across the country, we have billions and billions of dollars that are now dedicated towards future giving.
So I'll ask it in a different way. Jews have been philanthropic. The whole concept of tzedakah is woven into our identity. Tzedek, justice, means also tzedakah, making a monetary contribution into those causes that you value, really following your values. Many Jews have been incredibly philanthropic to a variety of causes, as you say, and they're a little philanthropic to their own causes. Now, some are doing it in a big way, but it often feels in the Jewish community like you could look at the list of the major donors at every art museum, at every symphony.
Okay.
But you may not find the same level of commitment to within the Jewish community itself. How do you address those kinds of questions?
We celebrate wherever donors are. So part of, it's a multifold answer.
Okay,
and it's a great question, so I'm glad you asked it. In order for Jews to thrive in our community, in our country, and around the world, we have to necessarily care about the community beyond ourselves, the communities that we live in. So investing in the broader community is extraordinarily important. When Jews contribute, I'm going to give you an example. Last year, through our doors, over $6 million flowed into our community, to the Jewish community, to the broader community, and
through the Jewish Community Foundation of Southern Arizona, to the general community,
and to the Jewish community,
and within the Jewish community as well, right?
Over $6 million.
Okay.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
To the U of A Foundation, through our doors, close to $750,000 flowed. If they got a whole bunch of little checks from people, they would be thrilled and they would say thank you. But getting those checks, those contributions on a Jewish check, because it comes out on the Jewish Community Foundation check, it shows the Jewish community partnership in a very different way. So the Jewish community as a community is supporting U of A, the food community food bank, the symphony, our local theater groups, and that has a double effect. Art museum, on and on and on.
Medical
hundreds, all the hospitals,
cancer centers,
all of that. Our donors also give to causes around the country and around the world. We do research for our donors. So along with our legacy giving, our plan giving, as you referred to it before, we also do philanthropic coaching for today's donors. So donors open a donor advised fund, and it's sort of like having a charitable checking account, because the donors, they make the contribution to the Jewish Community Foundation. And not to give a plug, but I will, it's $5,000 to open up a donor advised fund.
It's not a huge amount of money at all.
Not a huge amount of money. And in point of fact, a donor just has to come with $4,000, and the Jewish Community Foundation matches it $1,000. So that's a wonderful way to start your philanthropic giving. And what it is we have sort of your charitable dollars. You recommend where you want the dollars to go, and we make out a check. It goes to where you want the funds to go, and a letter on a Jewish check. And then the letter says it's coming from a particular donor's donor advised fund at the Jewish Community Foundation. The donor gets thanked. The recipient sees that it's Jewish community partnership. It's building community. And it's a wonderful way, again, for today's donors to have tax savings and tax advantages, appreciated stock, real estate, all that kind of thing. We're very sophisticated. The Jewish community has become extraordinarily sophisticated in helping people with philanthropy that benefits them on the tax side, but enriches our community. We also have many non-Jewish donors now.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating?
It is fascinating because
we
have a superb reputation. We are donor-centered. We help our donors extraordinarily. As I said, we do research, and everything we do, every penny that we earn from our fees, which are competitive, go back into building community. The third piece of what we do is we actually work with organizations throughout Tucson, and actually in New Mexico and in a number of other places as well, to help them grow their own endowments. We provide technical assistance. So more and more non-Jewish organizations are coming to the Jewish Community Foundation to put their funds with us so that we can help their endowments grow.
This is a period when the baby boom generation is retiring, getting older, when the World War II generation is passing from the scene, the greatest generation, sadly. It has been predicted that this is going to be the greatest transfer of wealth in the history of America, maybe in the history of the world, generationally speaking. How has that changed the way legacy giving is structured? How has that changed the way that you work?
I've been on staff for almost 4 years now. And what we have done, because this is going to be happening in Tucson as well, and as I said, our donors are all over the country, but they love the Jewish Community Foundation of Southern Arizona, and they trust us. We have built a reputation based on our service and our excellent service. So people are coming to us. We have an extraordinary amount of funding that will be coming to us that we will be managing. We will certainly be one of the largest foundations in the state of Arizona, if not in many, many states.
And are the donors now looking for things, looking in it for different kinds of instruments, different kinds of vehicles than donors in previous years, previous generations?
Yes. One thing, I'll explain one change that we have done. Traditionally, many donors want to bring their families involved. They want their kids involved. They want their kids as advisors on their fund. I'll tell you that that poses quite a challenge for us because in many situations, not all children get along.
How could that be?
How could that be? Exactly. So if you have three or four kids and you want them to get together once a year, many of those kids live around the country. All of a sudden, we are in the role of family mediator.
You're convening and mediating.
Exactly. Now, even though I'm a social worker, I don't want to touch it. That's not our role. So what we've actually helped our donors and are in the process of doing is helping our donors see that there's another way to achieve their goal. And that is having a piece of their annual distribution that's available for granting go to set up donor advised funds for their children. So every year, their kids will get a certain amount, and it's their philanthropic pot. Hopefully, they'll add to it, but it certainly is a way to have them really own it more because it's theirs. I mean, the foundation actually owns the asset, but it's theirs to direct where the money can go. We just did one legacy plan where the parents have changed it, so their kids now will each receive funds every year for their donor advice funds, and they've expressed their wishes that the kids will come together once a year to make those decisions together. But our hands aren't tied.
Right. I mean, I can imagine the complexity of it with all social work commentary yes. aside, you know, to set it up so that three or four or even two kids have to agree on a plan, it does seem like it makes them have to get together. But other than that, you wonder, does that also mean this preference for, okay, let's pass the decision-making on to the next generation. Does that mean that sometimes legacy plans change more than they used to?
I've only been doing this for 4 years. So I think, actually, I think the answer to that is probably yes, because we make it very easy. Usually people don't leave for their children to determine where all their funds go. Very few people have one beneficiary. In my 4 years, I haven't done one where a donor has only left their funds to one place. They usually have two or three places, and then they want to leave some for their children. So it kind of spreads it around. We have some donors who've left to 20
different, 30 different character houses. Right?
And the issue with that one is that's where size of the
estate
of the estate really does come into play. Because sure. if it's $10,000, you've got, it's going to throw off about $400 a year. Just to explain the basics of an endowment is, as opposed to a United Way campaign, where they raise money and then they spend it all.
Or they disperse it.
They disperse it all, exactly. They grant it out. With philanthropic planning, with long-term legacy planning, we keep the corpus, whatever that initial amount is, and then a percentage of the interest gets granted out every year.
So it's a giving rate, if you will, or exactly. We call it a spending rate in other contexts, but there's a certain amount that's given out.
That's exactly right. And we take into account inflation and variations in the economy. So in 2008, when the economy tanked and many foundations were unable to give any funds, we have a very sophisticated strategy where the beneficiaries of all of our endowment funds and our grants, they all receive funds. It might have been less, but they
remember,
all,
you know,
yes,
yeah,
but they all, everybody received funds. We did not. And we just understood that with our investments, those funds would be made back. And it in fact happened.
So there's some prophecy in all of this. There's an art, there's a science. You have to have financial sophistication
correct.
To read the conditions going forward with some accuracy. Tracy, thanks so much. A great lesson in endowment giving and creating a legacy of tzedakah going forward. Thanks again.
Thanks for all you do.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest will be Rabbi Marvin Heyer, founder and dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center and the Museum of Tolerance, and a two-time Oscar winner, too. Our playout this morning comes from Safam, Betzet Yisrael, when Israel came out of Egypt, from the Psalms. My friends, may you have a Chag Pesach Sameach, a happy and healthy Passover, a good Yontif, and a Shavua Tov, a good week. A week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.